call this Finance Audit Facilities Planning Committee meeting to order. The date is August 14th, 2012. The time is currently 6:10. Ms. Cortez, if we could please take roll.
Mr. Armando Rodriguez?
Present.
Ms. Patsy Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Rachel Quintana?
Yes, sure. And she did call. She won't be able to make it to me. Okay. Take us to the first item.
Agenda item 2A, review of district financials for July 1st through the 31st, 2012. Presenter Ms. Martha Aguirre.
Ms. Mendoza, do you have any questions on the financials?
I do not, sir. Thank you.
Okay. And Ms. Gonzalez, do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions.
Ms. Cáceres?
No.
Just wanted to make sure on the investment pools that we have,
yes.
Are we moving that money around, or are we seeing any,
Yeah, we have been moving some of the funds around. I did provide you with a memo 2 weeks ago with a Friday packet, where we provided information about an investment with Wells Fargo through a money market. And we are in the process of an additional transaction that will be provided in the Friday packet as well.
Okay, and then?
And we'll have to modify the way we present the investments on page six, so that we can go ahead and if you'll notice at the very bottom where we have the BBVA compass, that's one of the transactions that we recently made, and I provided that information.
Okay, and so I guess if there's any more questions, there's not any more questions, then can we recommend it to the board, Ms. Mendoza?
Absolutely.
Okay. We're in agreement to recommend it to the board. If you could take us to the next agenda.
Agenda 2B, review of
the
district from March 1st to 31st, 2012.
Presenter Ms. Aguirre. And Ms. Mendoza, do you have any questions?
No, sir, I do not.
Ms. Gonzalez?
No, thank you.
Ms. Cáceres?
No.
And I don't have any as well. Are we in agreement to recommend this to a full board?
Yes, we are.
We're in agreement to recommend it to a full board. If you could take us to next agenda.
Agenda item 2C, internal audit. Item 1, discussion regarding the request for proposal, bid process, and necessary board input and approval. Item 2, compliance calendar. And 3, hotline updates. Presenter Mr. Rodriguez.
Good evening, Chairman Rodriguez.
Oh, I'm members. I was all like, how am I presenting? But never mind. It caught me there.
Board members and Dr. Murphy, I recently was asked to research certain concerns related to RFP 12-14, wastewater treatment, constructed wetland replacement. As a result of my research, I issued a draft memo on August 6, 2012. In the memo, there is a recommendation that I would like to discuss with the committee. And board members.
Do you happen to have that in paper format, or? I have it, but not on paper.
Ms. Brigham can make copies.
Yeah.
Or Ron, or whoever.
Is that it?
Okay.
You could go ahead.
The recommendation reads that the board should consider requiring administration to seek board approval prior to conducting negotiations for bids that are over budget or bids that will result in significant scope and price changes. Now, this recommendation is not intended to apply to all bids, but only those bids that are over budget and or require significant change in scope. This recommendation is based on bid process concerns shared with me by previous board members and by various board members and board member concerns expressed during the June 28th special board meeting. If the board agrees to implement this recommendation, I think we should discuss the following questions. What conditions would require administration to seek board approval prior to entering into negotiations with a contractor? For example, bids that are over budget. What information should administration bring to the board when seeking approval to enter into negotiations with a contractor? How involved would the board like to be in the bid process prior to administration entering into negotiations with a contractor? For example, would the board like to review bid proposals, approve the bid evaluation matrix, and select the contractor? Please offer your thoughts about this topic. Thank you.
And I guess from reading the part of the report, the major concern was the scope of work had changed and they went back to the lowest bidder, right? So administration was able to negotiate with the lowest bidder.
Correct.
And the scope of work changed. My thing, and I would like to send it to a policy committee, is to have, if any scope of work, whether we want to put a percentage or just if any scope of work does change, that we actually notify all individuals. My recall on the proposal was kind of weird that you had, you had different, I guess it was the interpretation or who followed the scope of work, who didn't, and so there was a lot of questions that were asked at the last meeting, and the best thing to do is be transparent about it and fair and equal. So the concern I have, or what I would say, unless anybody sees different, is that we look at the bid process and make sure if any scope of work is changed that we actually go to whoever did propose, or whether it's a proposal, and it's pretty much under the proposals, right? Not under an RFQ. Ron, would that be?
That would be an RFQ.
Ron, can you come up to the podium?
That would be under RFQ.
That would be under policy CVB legal. That would address the request for proposal.
And so part of the discussion was that under an administrative reg, it was allowed, right? But under the board policy,
under
the legal, there's no
the
local, right?
The administrative reg, it gives the purchasing agent the authority to determine the best value. And then also under CH local, it states that, and I'm paraphrasing here, that negotiations can be entered after bids are open. And the way that CVB legal reads is that that the district shall select the offer that submits the proposal that offers the best value for the district based on the selection criteria in the request for proposal and the weighted value for those criteria in the request for proposal and on its ranking evaluation.
So, does anybody else have any questions or anything?
I do.
Go ahead.
You mentioned, this is for Mr. Armando Rodriguez. You mentioned notifying all individuals. I wasn't here at that board meeting. So, thank you. There was one, obviously, I don't have many folks around here. So you went to negotiations with companies?
We realized we were under budget. We contacted our engineer on the job and asked him, why do you think this is over budget? And he looked at the bids and he realized that both bidders overbid on a couple of items, which meant that they both, he seen that it was extreme what they were bidding on. Quite understand it, so they started negotiation with the low bidder to see what his understanding of the scope of work was. And that's how we get the value of engineering to bring the price up.
And why didn't you with both bidders?
Because the Texas law states that we go into negotiation with the low bidder first, who gives us the best value. We entered into negotiation with that vendor. If we can't come to an agreement, we in writing cease negotiation with that vendor and go to the second low and ask for it.
How much of a difference was it between the companies?
Between the two companies, there was about approximately $100,000 difference in the two companies.
But that would be without a change of scope of work, right?
That's right. That's before when we first opened the bids.
And but there was a change in the scope of work, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. So my suggestion is if there is going to be change in the scope of the work, whoever submits their proposals, that, you know, we would give everybody that opportunity as well. Because
but you can't do that, because then you're playing one against the other, and that's not legal. Is that right, Steve?
I'm trying to look at the policy. Can you say that again?
Well, when you can't actually bring both into the negotiation process, because then you're using the leverage one has with the low price, and you can't use one person's price against the other.
You pick one, and then you enter into negotiation. The problem is, who's making the selection? If I remember the issue correctly, there's a, in one of the policies, there's a word, is it selection or is it awards? I don't remember which one it is.
The verb is select and then CVB legal.
When the administration determines which entity is going to be the best value, it's done by the administration. Now, under local regulation, that selection decision allows them to negotiate with that entity to determine what the price is going to be. If you read CVB local narrowly and strictly, it would mean the board have to first approve that selection. It's never been done that way in practice. I've talked to Mr. Gallin about it. I know it's not done that way in practice in other districts. It's done the way the Tank 2 is doing it now, where the selection is determined. They're going to make that recommendation, but they're going to talk to the entity that's been selected and get a price.
But on this, what we're saying is on the selection process, that there be, if there is a scope of work change, that change would be given to everyone.
You'd have to, I think you would actually have to have the administration come to you and say this project has changed so drastically in its scope and what we're asking for, we're tossing it out, we're starting up with the issue and read that.
Go ahead.
Steve, can you speak in the microphone a little bit?
Mr.
You know, and it's no different than what we have in other policies with respect to the change in the percentage of the scope of work. We just went through that with the Kennecott High School field. I don't see it any different that we can use as a guidance in terms of, okay, selection, the bid process is up, we're negotiating with the lowest, well, the best value, okay, bidder that we determine is the best value bidder. And the change, there's a change in scope of the work. Well, if it's a certain percentage, I think we can continue to do that. And I think that's where the guidelines that we ought to probably set exactly when we've already awarded a bid. Or about to award a bid on the recommendation from administration. Is if the change of scope of work changes by a certain percentage, we need to just redo it out anyways. I mean, we already have that guidance.
We went through the same process when we did the field house, when we opened bids. We negotiated with the old low bidder because we actually did some value-added engineering. If you remember that process, I think you were here when we did that.
Yeah, I was here.
We changed up the subcontractor for the...
But that's when it already had been selected. This
same process. The board hadn't approved it yet.
Yeah.
Not the board had approved it.
No, you couldn't have because we still didn't have a price. We hadn't come to a negotiated price to bring to the board. Now, if it's an RFQ, of course, you know, you have to bring the best qualified, you know, your engineer, your architect, you bring them in, and then the board decides which one's the best qualified, and then you go into negotiation and contract for the fees for that, because you can't ask.
But to provide a fair process, can we say either in an administrative reg or something, let's say if the scope of work changed within 20%, of whatever, and we'll probably see a lot more, but
sure.
You have somebody come in and you know, that whole thing was completely a mess to my, there was a lot of questions when you looked at, you know, not just the amount, but the quantity, but how much each quantity and how much it varied, and you saw it, and it was And then we went back with one individual and then just looked at it. And my thing is, in the future, what we need to do is, okay, if we're going to change any scope of work, we need to let them know, because then the price could change on any of them.
Well, that's the guidelines we're asking of you tonight. So what process do you want to follow? What's to follow? Do you want to, if it exceeds the budgeted amount, do you want us to bring it to you before we go any further with it? Well, that's you're going to have to decide on which method you want.
That's one of the things that we need to look at, because if it exceeds a budget amount, which pretty much a lot of these projects are, we need to know that firsthand, and we need to make that decision as a board, because we're probably going to get it at the end of the day.
Well, even at that point, if you do decide that, okay, we bring it to you and you say, okay, yeah, we'll go ahead and go with a little bidder, start negotiating with a little bidder, we still have to negotiate with just that bidder. If we can't come to an agreement, we have to, in writing, cease negotiation with that vendor, go to the next low, that's best value. And that's the process. That's we can't change that.
Through the chair, can I ask you a clarifying question? So if the project budget is $100,000, the low bidder is $130,000, and the next one is $160,000, from what I'm hearing, we need to bring that back to the board, explain, hey, we're 30 grand over, well, we're over budget.
Right.
But the direction cannot be, we'll go back to all the vendors again unless we close it.
Unless we close that and rebid.
Well, if we change the scope of work, then we should go back to all vendors. But well, if we're going to actually...
In most construction projects, you're going to change the scope of work a little bit anyway, anytime you enter into a negotiation.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're changing the scope of work, it's not... how do you say it? Like, you could... We could look at it at the other way, right? You chose the lower, and then later on, I'm sure this isn't happening, but you could change the scope of work, and it could be for more. And actually, it did happen, but we already had approved it when it came to the track. Right. And let's say if it could have been more, or there could have been a change order. I mean, that stuff has to come to us under policy when it comes to a change order. So if there's a change in scope of work, it should be the same.
We can't change CV legal, that's state.
No, I know that. And are we looking at change? Have I asked to change?
I think the fundamental question is, at what level when a project, and I remember the meetings about the project, the time crunch and everything, at what level when a project becomes so different than what you thought it was originally going to be, are you going to require them to close it and rebid it and rebid it, have an opportunity to bid? That's the question. If you're stuck with what we had there, I mean, I don't think that there's nothing the administration can do other than negotiate with the offer that was selected. And negotiate and bring it back. But the scope is so different. If you contract and you say, I'm picking you to build a one-room building, and it turns out that one-room building can't be built, it has to be a five-room building. Are you going to just negotiate with that same single entity, or are you going to close it and rebid it? It's a silly example, but you would probably close it and rebid it. So maybe somebody can do a five-room building cheaper than that person can do a one-room building. I don't know if that happened in this case, but I do know the chance of moving.
So, okay, when we actually, when administration shows us the best value right under that, and that's an administrative reg, or that's legal?
That's legal.
That's legal?
So an administrative reg is the one that allows the purchasing agent to determine the best value.
So that's an administrative reg, right?
Yes.
So it's not a legal...
You know, if I am hearing you correctly, if, you know, all the bids that come in for a particular RFP are over budget, you would like administration to bring those proposals to the board for direction?
No. I think what I would like to see, if the administration is going to change the scope of work, that they should give the opportunity to everybody saying, hey, we're changing the scope of work. It's not going to be one bedroom. It's going to be five bedrooms or whatever it may be. Well,
before they change the scope of work, if we have just bids that come in that are over budget, or is that something that...
Well, we should be made aware of that, because we're okay. going to see that a lot. And, I mean, under the bond program, we projected a certain budget for those projects.
And so So at that point, I think administration can provide you information related to, you know, the prices that came in, that they're over budget, and seek direction from the board. Do we want to close this bid, change the scope of work, and rebid it? And then we can offer each bidder an opportunity to rebid? Or do we want to go with the winning vendor or contractor? Does the board want input on analysis of the winning vendor? So does the board want to look at the proposal? Does the board want to evaluate the evaluation matrix? Does the board want to select the vendor?
This is what I'm thinking is, once the scope of work changed, then they should have gone to all people that proposed and said, okay, we're not going to be doing this, or we're going to be adding this. Give us your price on everybody so that way it's fair. And then they could analyze those proposals. Are you allowed to do that?
The only way to do that is rebid it. Yeah.
To rebid it?
You can't, once you've negotiated a price with me, it's not legal for you to then use that price to go to you.
Through the chair, Jennifer Matthews has a comment, if you would be willing to entertain it.
Well, that's good.
For example, if you were to change the scope of work during the bidding process, you can make that change and issue it to all the vendors, but that's before the end of the deadline, but that's before it closes. So really, when we're talking about changing the scope of work, it's really things that, one, aren't similar across the board. For example, let's just say certain vendors can get certain prices, or, you know, that's where the negotiation part comes in. But after hearing all your comments, I was wondering if I might recommend this, that we adopt like a two-step process, for example. We go back, we evaluate, we rank all the vendors in a certain order as per the policy, okay, and we come back to you all in a board meeting and say, do you approve the way they're ranked, you know, the sequence? And based on that sequence, you authorize us to enter into negotiation with the first one, okay? Then we go back, we negotiate with them. The negotiation is that change in price, and we can't know what percentage in change in price it will be. Maybe there's something that we can do that can drastically reduce that price. Like maybe there's a part of the demo that we can do, or there's different things that it's hard to know. It depends on each vendor's situation and what we're gonna do to bring that price down. Who knows what amount, you know, that's part of the negotiations. Then we come back to you, the second board meeting, and say, hey, we negotiated with the first ranked one, which you approved of, and here's the price and the work that we arrived at, which doesn't generally change in nature or direction. It's the same end goal. And then at that point, you can review all of your options. You can accept the negotiation. You can tell us to officially close that in writing, as Mr. Gatlin recommended, and move on to the second ranked vendor. Or you can close the RFP entirely. And
reject all bids.
And you can reject all bids. And basically, we could adopt a clean two-step process where there's no gray lines of what percentage or is it over budget. It's just a clean two-step thing with all RFPs. Here's who responded. Here's where they're ranked. Everything good? We're moving with number one? All right. And then come back again and see what happened with, you know, how it comes out with number one. And just adopt that across the board. And I think that might be something that you might consider.
Would that be a policy that we would need to look at, or an administrative regulation?
You put that in the CB local, can't you?
You have a regulation already in place. I think you would just have to revise it. I don't
know. So that would be under regulation, not local.
The regulation is approved by cabinet, and local is approved by the board.
Yeah.
Approved by the local policy.
I just have a comment. Because we are doing so many construction projects in the future, I mean, when I looked at both of those projects, it was like they were not even bidding the same project. The amount of dirt that was going to be moved did not match. The amount of liner that was going to be provided did not match. So whoever sits on the committee, I think they need to look at that, and it should raise a red flag when you have people bidding the exact same project and their quantities are completely different. Hence, why one came out so high, because the amount of dirt they were moving, the amount of liner did not match the other vendor. So when you look at the base price, though, it was pretty relative. But because the quantities were so different, that's where I think there was an issue. And I think whoever sits on the committee needs to review that. They need to look at that before. I think we could have avoided all this mess had that been looked at closer.
Yeah, it all depends on the way the plans are interpreted also. Depends on doing the takeoff on the plans. They all have the same plans. They look at it, they measure. I mean, it's just like a plumbing bid or an electrical bid. They all have to figure out how much pipe they're going to need, how much wiring they're going to need, and they have to figure that into their bid. That's part of their process, and that's where they make their money. And so if they misinterpret the plans, or sometimes they'll put a little overkill in there to make sure they're covered.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's you're going to get a lot of variances like that. So it's,
okay. Well, I looked at it, it looked different.
Honestly, if we had more time to do this process, I probably would have recommended we rebid it.
Mm-hmm.
But due to the deadlines we were up against and everything else, this was the best, and I think the best option we could to get this done this summer. If we'd had time, I would have recommended that we rebid it.
Okay.
I would have.
Yeah.
The other thing that, looking, since it is the proposal bid process, I was watching the city council today, and I've seen how some of the stuff that they actually providing is something that we need to look at when it comes to the rating, the points or whatever. Looking at, being local, having past experience with the district, and then I know the city requires insurance, and I wouldn't want to look at that, especially now that the law is changing. But past experience, the local. I know within the bond program when administration was going out to sell it. Some of the people were, let's make sure that it goes local, so that way those people that, give back either to the community or hire our local people is better. So if that's something that we could look at when we're looking at the proposal point system. And I'm sure Ms. Matthews probably dealt with that. I don't know if the county does it, but I know the city does that.
And we do this.
Yeah. On the local, it's like a 20% local.
Well, we can set the percentages. The highest percentage always has to be cost.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's like 80%.
It doesn't have to be 80. It has to be the highest weight.
Then can we look at what the city does and then look at something that is sort of...
Well, the city goes by a little bit of different rules than we do. We do have that ranking. It's in the 44034. Education code. It states what we can use for ranking.
Yeah, and I think the meeting was at the church hall. I heard somebody, I remember somebody, and I think it might have been Montoya, Mr. Montoya. And then there were some other people that said, yeah.
As far as the bomb?
Yes. Yeah. And so I think what we need to do is look at that.
Yeah, we can rank it. See, that brings up another subject. Do you want me to present to you before we go out for bid the ranking so you can approve the way it's supposed to be ranked? I can do that too before we go out for bid. I can bring you the proposal and say this is the way that I recommend you rank it. You can choose the percentage or whatever. The only thing is it's going to slow projects down.
Can we set a minimum threshold like $50,000, and if we go through this process and anything below would stay under the same process, the current process or something like that?
Well, I mean, pretty much the summer is already here, so how many big projects are we going to actually do?
And so, covered up with projects.
And I think we have time. I mean, it's something that we need to look at, and that way we create that process and then do it.
I would be happy to do it, sure, the way the board chooses, but I just need some guidance.
If you could bring back something, then I could put an item.
Be happy to do that.
Sure.
Yeah, the other thing we need to determine is what's local for us. What's local to the city could be different.
Well, you could say
local within district or within the city, within the county, within what?
You could give, let's say, a percentage for local within district. You could also give.
You're saying.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is bring back some proposals. You could say even 5 years local or 10 years local. Because there's some companies that. That's a discussion we need to have and look at. So if we could get something back to us, and then we could look at
it. We'll do those. Your definition of
local. Yeah.
So. start thinking this, I mean, there's a lot of different variables that we're going to have to look at.
Let's look at the city, and then let's see who else does it, and then...
We do that on all of it. It's a state law. I have to follow it. We have to rank everyone where it is.
Okay. Is there any other questions with regard to the proposal bid process? No?
No.
Okay.
So you want the administration to bring back language for CV local that would reflect Jennifer's recommendation?
Correct.
All right. Cabinet, please make note of that. We'll have to work on that.
Okay, we're going to change regulation also.
Well, it's board policy supersedes a regulation, so you all would have to look at the administration.
Yeah, we'd probably bring regulation in
that agreement.
Okay. Was that it on this one, Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes, I believe so.
On one? So we could go to number two?
So number two is a compliance calendar. And the compliance calendar that you have in front of you, I subdivided into years, so we have some corrective activity from 2008. The next section is 2010, and then 2011, and 2012. The work performed by the previous auditor is in the gray shaded area, and the activities that I performed are in regular black font. The latest updates are in green bold, and so tonight I'm just going to be speaking about the green bold areas. The first corrective activity is related to a project named Transportation Review. And the corrective activity is related to leave earned for employees in the Transportation Department. And so I had a meeting with Juan Miranda, Transportation Supervisor, and Teresa Roberts, Payroll Supervisor, to get an understanding of this corrective activity. Based on our conversation, I asked for a list of transportation employees that I was going to select a sample from to verify that their leave granted is accurate. And so I'm in the process of selecting that sample, and I'm going to submit that sample to payroll to determine whether the amounts are accurate. The next corrective activity that I worked on is on page two, and the project name is TEA CTE PAR audit, and the corrective activity is that the principal's department head will identify all documents within their respective areas of responsibility to which the non-discrimination and the dual language requirements apply, bring them into full compliance. And so basically what this is a review of written communications that we share with parents and general public to ensure that it has a non-discrimination clause. And during the Leadership Academy on July 30th, 2012, I gave a presentation, and within that presentation, I asked the principals and department heads to please review their documents and to let me know by August 20th that they have reviewed their documents and ensured that, you know, the non-discrimination clause is on their written communications. So far, I've received three emails certifying that, you know, this has been completed. And so I'll go ahead and continue the monitoring of this corrective activity. The next one is for the same project, and it's the one that starts, CISD will provide secondary counselors with related professional development. And this professional development is related to gaining training in the CT area. And on August 22nd, Mike Rodriguez from Region 19 will be providing a CTE training, which I'll attend. However, the counselors would not be able to attend because of registration, so we're going to have to find I guess some other training that they can attend. Maybe Ms. Rodriguez can provide additional training at another time or find some other training opportunities. The next corrective activity that I'd like to talk about is on the last page, on page four.
The project name is Financial Statement Audit, and the corrective activity is CISD will satisfy the 55% spending requirement for GT, and SCE will satisfy 60% spending requirements, as well as the CTE program. And Financial Services has developed a calendar where they have a certain milestone dates for the district. And you can see there that on December 7th, 50% is supposed to be expended. On January 13th, 60% is supposed to be expended. And on February 28th, 75% is supposed to be expended. I also generated some reports from the team system with the budget balances for GT, SCE, and CTE. I provided those balances to the respective data owners. Also validated that this information was correct, and worked with Financial Services to validate the information. I sent out the information to the data owners and asked them to monitor their spending levels throughout the year. Those are the corrective activities that I followed up this month. Does anybody have any questions?
No, sir. Thank you.
Anybody? No? Thank you, sir. And that will take us to the next item.
The next item, I'd like to talk about the compliance hotline update. The previous meeting, I presented 19 compliance hotline cases that needed monitoring. I analyzed that list and also worked with human resources. During meetings with human resources, we identified cases that had already been addressed through the human resource department. So many of those cases were closed out based on the work that was already performed. The remaining cases, I worked with the supervisors of the areas that hotline cases involved. And typically, I would either call or email the case complaints to the supervisors and request that they address the issues and respond with any corrective action that they made. Once I received the corrective action that they implemented, if it was adequate, then I closed the case. And so, based on that work, there remains only one case. There's five cases in front of you, but since I issued this update, four have been closed, and so there's only one that remains open. And since I've been here, there has not been any cases that have been submitted to the hotline.
Has there been any, so the total amount of cases that before you arrived, how many of those are we completely, once that one is closed out, are we done with all the cases?
We're complete and all the cases will be closed.
Okay, so we, unless a new case opens.
Unless
then
a new case comes.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Ms. Mendoza?
No, sir.
Anybody?
Thank you,
sir.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Is the telephone line working?
the hotline number? Yes, it's working.
I love it.
Yes, because at one time it was not working, and we got that repaired.
That's good.
Okay. I guess that could take us to the next agenda item. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Rodriguez.
You.
Nice.
Agenda item 2D, audit bond project update. President Ms. Matthews. And through the chair, also in item D, under the broad scope of bond project update, Mr. Mike Bailey is also here from Johnson Controls, and regarding the district-wide, he's available to answer any questions. He'll also be up for item F, but anything regarding district-wide we can talk about as well here.
Good evening, Mr. Rodriguez, members of the subcommittee, Director Murphy.
What I'm bringing you is our latest progress. Of course, first I'd like to briefly hit some of our hot topics, which are the flooring at CES, which is nearly complete, the tracks, which are scheduled to be complete at all three sites, the BCU wetlands, scheduled to be finished this Friday. So we've made progress on some of those big projects. But what I wanted to show you was the update, and this is the first report that we are doing jointly with finance. We've been working with Gloria DeLeon, the bond accountant, and she's been, we're her understudies. We're trying to learn how to be more finance savvy. So what you have here basically is the global summary of all of the projects, right? And the way these are split up, the ones that are in the bright yellow are the ones that say, and this column under phase complete, those are the ones that have been completed. The ones that are in blue are the ones that are part of the Johnson Controls Energy Savings Performance Contract. The ones that are in the pale yellow have not been touched. And the ones that are in white are active projects. So you can see on your left-hand side that there's a number assigned to each of these line items. So as you can see it's by which bond and the whole nine yards. So this gives you a an accounting perspective. But a lot of the questions and where facilities plays a role is the detail or the explanation associated with those numbers. So the 8.5 by 11 sheets are the details. So for each of the, right now we're a third of our way through in reporting on the active projects. So if you look at these sheets on your right, yes, your right hand side, there's a project number. So the way this works is you look here and you're like, okay, project number 8, right? So then you can just take this one and you can go down to project number 8 and you can look at boiler pumps and you can see which PO it was. You know, if it's been spent, and then underneath the PO you can look at the explanation. Oh, okay, they reconditioned 3 pumps, right? And this is one of the, that one only has the one line item, of course, but you can see some of these which have, that way depending on the project you're interested in, you can look up any number, you can look at the detail sheet, and any of the lines in white should have a detail report attached to them. So, I don't know if you guys have any questions, or if you
want to
look at any of those in particular.
On the, I guess one of the things that I would like to look at is seeing a timeline of the projects that we can do within the next 3 months, or the next, I guess, till December when school starts, those projects that can be done when kids are there, so that way we could start using our bond program money.
Correct. And so, really, as you'll see here, all of the ones that we're able to do have pretty much been started. We're trying to move away from maintenance doing these projects. So one of the big items for later on in tonight's agenda and also for our next board meeting is finalizing all of the AE contracts. And with that, that's like, you know, the gunshot at the beginning of the race that can get a lot of those things started. In the case of the elementary schools, we may be able to finish those here pretty quickly. And the ones that have building additions, I mean, roughly the schedule is design in the fall, bid in the spring, and construction in the summer. So if you remember back a little while ago when we were unrolling this process, in the second page of this, there was 3 sections. So you had your summary report, you had your financial summary, and you had pictures and timelines, right? So by our next meeting, because this takes a lot of historical archive digging up on information and POs, and we're a third of the way there, when you finalize the AE contracts, a lot of these that you see in pale yellow will become active, which is great, because right now you'll see a lot of them are the accounts, you know, not touched.
So they would turn white?
Yeah, in other words, after the contract has been, after you all finalize the contract, we can cut a PO for the design fees, and you'll see that now we have an amount that's committed, and it'll be financially active, you could say. Like that project would have seen activity. So what we're trying to do is to finish up the rest of the financial detail reports for the next time we come to you. And Maria has been doing a very awesome job of that. And then after that, we'll come back in our next phase with the pictures. We're rolling it out one milestone at a time, you could say.
Have we looked at changing on the CDM, which is the construction delivery method? The last meeting, we were under the agreement that to move forward with the request for qualifications for the building project. But pretty much what I'm seeing is all of them say CSP. Have we not?
Yeah, that's that? Correct. And if we could focus on the financial part of this report, that column is actually, you're absolutely right.
Okay. So I guess on the next one, if you could update that.
Yeah, I apologize for that.
Just let us know how the proposal or the documents are. Do they have to come back to the board or for approval?
The
RFQ was the last meeting. Does it have to come back again, Mr. Gatlin, or you all are going to proceed with the request for
first of all, there won't be an RFQ. That's for architects and engineers. It'll be either construction manager at risk or better than civil proposals. So it'll be those two.
But on the construction manager at risk, we have to go out for a request for qualification. Correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So the last time the direction we gave was on those projects to start the process on the RFQ. Does that need to come back to the board or?
Yes, correct me if I'm wrong, we would go through that same process, ranking them, and then bringing the order before.
Okay. So that's in process, right, or in progress. Okay, and then I like the information that, you know, just the setup, so I thank you for, sure it was a lot of work. Does anybody have any questions?
I just want to compliment Ms. Matthews and whoever. It's very complete. It's easy to read. You can follow through. Thank you.
Can we actually do like a read if that project's completely out, like, or something? Something that tells us, hey, this project, we don't need to go back to it. It's pretty much done.
Yeah, I can change the color on the ones that are complete to something that's more pronounced.
Which ones are
like
the ones that are
bright yellow, light yellow?
Yeah.
Which ones are the ones that are complete? Oh, okay.
Yeah, like that. Yellow. One dark shade yellow. Of yellow. I hope you're colorblind.
Okay.
Okay. As I'm being the older of the board members, the red is kind of hard on my eyes. I mean, like a pink or something. Here's specific sheets. Maybe it's because I don't have my glasses, but I agree with Mr. Rodriguez that maybe on some of those items that are closed out, you can have it like in a, you know,
thank you,
in a different color that just, you know, it's closed. And for example, like the, and I agree with Patsy, then this is a great, this is something we should have had. We used to do it on one sheet on the report to the board at the monthly deal, but this is really, this is really good. I commend you guys for doing this. The only suggestion I would have, that instead of having both colors red on the remaining budget, because you have remaining and then project cost, and it's in the same color.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And maybe change both red colors.
All right, sure, we can do that.
And for the older board members.
And of course, this will all be shared with CBAC as well, Chairman.
Yes.
CBAC will have all of this.
The other question, was that it, Mr. Cornell?
Yeah, that's all I have. Good job.
The other question I have regarding the budget, the projected budget that your previous individual had, did you, I guess, how are we going to address the amount of money? Have we looked back to see what your projected amount is? And what we previously projected, and are we over budget or under budget?
I'm not.
I'm reading your mind.
To get, well, we're going to have to look at it, and we need to look at those numbers.
Right. What we're trying to do is, for example, within a given campus, that's why the architect firms, when we did that alignment, is per campus. So they can see, okay, there's this amount of money budgeted per campus, and there's these projects. How can we, let's just say, like in the case of the high school, that architect can work with that, with the campus administration, okay, this was the intent, this is the scope of work. Okay, maybe your track cost, I don't know, $200,000, right? And maybe now your baseball upgrades were only $130,000, but now they're, you know, they can address all of them, so you can fulfill your commitment with every single line item, yet they can manage how that work is, you know, to a degree, you know?
Can we put like another column and put over budget or under budget and then the amount?
Well, actually, what this does is for example, and let me pick
one here. You want it on there? Mr. Coronado, real quick. And
Ms. Matthew, sorry. I agree with you on some of those issues, but on the bigger issues, no.
Right.
We had a problem, you weren't around, we had a problem at the high school. Administration took it upon themselves to cut things out that the board was not happy with, and we had to respond to the community. And we're dealing with it again with this bond issue.
Right.
So I'm saying that means if it's a certain amount of that something's getting cut out that we promised the community we were going to do, no.
Right.
Not even the campus administration has a right to change that. It's got to come back to us. I'm sorry.
Correct. And so
they can suggest stuff to us.
Right.
That, hey, look, we're under budget and this is what we suggest, how we spend it. I think it should come back to us before that gets done, though, because we promised the community certain things, and that decision, whether it cuts out, we have to deal with the community, or if it's changed in any way,
right,
we should be the ones that take the hickey on that.
So I think, and we had discussed this before, that an ideal way to do that, for example, in the case of, let's just say, like the flooring that we recently awarded, when you're given to approve the flooring contract, and let's just say it's over budget, by that same token, together with that, you should be submitted the budget amendment so you can see where that's going to come from. Okay, if this one is this much, and that way those two decisions go hand in hand, and that's what we would be moving towards for that very reason.
But what I would like to see it as on the spreadsheet too, so that way we're
right.
We're.
So, getting to that,
it has it on the detailed one. Is that what you're looking at?
Right. I'm trying to
find an example. What
project? For example, you can see like, let's just take the BCU wetlands because I've been working a lot on that. You can see, let's just, if that's project number 29. The original project budget was $100,000, right? And this is straight off of the PowerPoint that you can see, so you all can track that, okay? And there was a budget amendment for $17,000. So after your budget amendment, $117,000, that matches your columns in the global summary sheet, right? And you can see these are all the POs for support things that are part of a project cost. Sierra Springs Water, the porta potties, Martinez Brothers contracts, and you can see all the invoices. All of this goes to the design firm. How much we've paid them out? $20,000. So you can see from the dark line, you can see there's $17 remaining, right? And then this is what the financials are going to show you. But then for our own notes, here's the backs. You know, here's things that are in progress. I think some of them say pending approval or in progress. Okay, NSI, their full contract through construction administration is for $24,220. So that's coming up. And then you can see Martinez Brothers contractors. There's a difference of $19,300 to amend that PO. So it's going to require, so you can see this bottom number right here, total project cost to date is going to be $143,000. So what this sheet enables you is to look at, and these are things that haven't happened yet, but these are things as us, you know, that are in progress, right? So you can see your original budget was $100,000. It's been amended to $117,000. But we're telling you in facilities, after all the transactions go through, you're looking at a total project cost of $143,000.
And what I would like to see is just an extra column saying it was under budget by $43,000.
Well, okay, so what I can do is I can add something to that.
Not on the main one.
Oh, so on the main one.
Yeah, it's a lot. Is there any room?
Isn't there an original column and then an actual column? There isn't, or was that removed?
See, the problem is that this spreadsheet is like, if you ask finance, this is the real...
We can't buy a larger paper, right?
They are. They're working on it. Maria told me. Jennifer, this is the max you can put down here.
I think originally there was a column that said original budget and actual budget. However, we, you know, it kind of has evolved as additional items come. We can certainly consider the original budget will be what was presented in the bond
program.
And then as Jennifer moves forward with the different projects and we get an actual cost, or projected cost, then we can start adding on to that.
And that's what I would like to see, because then I could total all of it up and say, okay, this is how much over budget. And then we're gonna have to look either on that money, because I mean, it's all budget, either we're gonna have to look at, are we gonna have to do it? Is there other options where we could do it? Do we have to go out to the voters or what?
See, in the case of the wetlands, for example, if facilities is projecting after all the transactions go through that it's 143. So you can see the difference, right? And I can put that column of how much over it was from your original budget, right? But if you, we can add that column, but if you go back and you ask Martha, hey, the official, you know, she's gonna say, look, this is the system isn't showing that, because these are transactions that are in progress. As a project manager, I'm telling you, this is what we're working on. This is what's in the works. And so I know that we're gonna be this much different. But if you go to finance and you ask them, that's why it's on this detail sheet. If you go to finance and you ask them, they're gonna be like, look, this is what the books say. This is...
It's actual cost.
Then can we just do another sheet, like a maybe just a single page where it has the bond program, I mean the bond, what it was budgeted for, and then what the cost, and then what the difference is. So that way later on we could total that and say, okay, well, we need to find, you know, 2 million, we need to find 300,000.
Right.
Or we need to go back out to the voters to actually get that project done.
I envision that would be part of the beginning, you know, as this sheet, many columns, where we actually start looking at encumbrances and actual expenditures, that we're going to put those projected original costs and projected costs towards the beginning, so that it, because of course not until she finalizes every single expenditure will we know what the actual cost was.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So projected cost would be what you are expecting it to be. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We can work on that. Yeah.
Okay. Is there any other questions regarding the only other question that I had, and I had the last time we had a meeting on the energy management, I asked, and I guess we didn't put an actual item, but it does fall under the bond project, under the energy management, what was it that you got from the attorneys? We had asked to look at as the budget and then look at can the energy management go without the architectural, or do we have to have that same agreement? And then the other thing was, will the architect also do an energy management contract?
So right now we're trying to see, of course Johnson Controls has the option of doing their in-house team, or looking at another, you know, architect firm that we would hire independently. So right now, they have met with the attorneys to make sure that they're following that process properly. We have had several meetings where we're working on it diligently, and they are still keeping us in suspense. And I think we will know by the end of the week. We are scheduled to hear by the end of the week from Johnson Controls.
Okay, so what is being recommended, or what are we going to be looking at?
The board's original, administration's original recommendation was that we hire an architect firm directly. However, since that time, we've spoken to Johnson Controls, and they're pondering it, and they will come back to us with an answer.
Okay. And when are we looking at that?
We will come to you at the next board meeting with the next step as a result of whatever is decided.
And the budget, do we know, like, what you're giving us with the other information? Do we have that information as well? Budget? Sort of like what you have for the architect.
Oh, yeah, sure. Because all the ones that are in blue, so at the bottom, on the last page of this report, you can see the totals for everything in blue, and their original 2011 budget is $10,620,000.
And what about the AE?
Mr. Buckle, would you like to speak to the AE? He's regarding the cost to the cost of the Johnson Controls project, so I've given him the our project budget from the bond, and he's inquiring as to the cost of the AE fees.
I don't know that we're in a position to give that to you right now.
Okay.
Okay, we're bringing that back in with the final contract. We're not in a position to give you the figures right now, but we're going to bring the contract to the next regular meeting, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And my thing is looking at the projected budget on the actual cost, because the architect was saying it would cost like $17 a square foot or something. And if we could get that on the next one, I guess when we have more information.
Yeah, we are working on it.
Okay.
Through the chair, that very well could be an item that we would bring straight to the regular board meeting at the end of the month and bypass your committee meeting, since it is timely. Would that be a problem?
That's fine. Just as long as we have all the information that is needed to make a...
Because I don't know if we want to wait all the way for another month for your committee.
That's fine. The last monthly meeting, I had requested that we have it on this one, and that's why I called Ms. Matthews to see if we could have it. And I guess we just put the high school one, but...
Yeah, we'll, and we have that.
Okay. Oh, yes, ma'am.
I have a question on Project 109. What is it? What kind of improvements were done?
The chlorine band room. It was indicated to me that the band room floor was changed, but I have to be very honest with you here. On this line item, if it showed, for example, in this case, the budget was $15,000 and they spent $14,900 of it and the project was closed, I just mentally scratched it off my list because I was, I can't actually tell you.
If I'm not mistaken, it was the choir room that was redone last summer to start as one of the early bird projects. It wasn't the band room.
Right, and it just says,
And it was complete.
Do we have the, I guess, was
maybe,
that?
Maybe it was both.
Was that it, Ms. Quinn?
It was both the band room and choir room.
For the AMS?
No, at the high school.
There was tile, and then... But we didn't project the budget for the band room. We're on the original bit. We want to look at it because it's critical.
You mean for a renovation of the entire band room? We're talking about, I think we just put new carpet in there.
Yes, but we're looking at the size because it could hold a...
Right.
Yeah. Is that correct, Mr. Cornell? Is that what you're...
Yeah, if we were, we wanted to, I think administration told us we wanted to redo it with tile, but it, I think in the cost issue, some of the carpeting has been...
I think, sir, was that the choir wanted tile and the band wanted carpet. And that's what we did. And I can check, and I'll have that in the Friday package. I don't want to misspeak, but I think that's what it was.
What about the striping outside? What did the...
Jennifer, the new band practice court, you did the striping?
We did that in-house.
We did that in-house?
Yes. I mean, yes, since I was here, we have striped it in-house.
We did not pay the company to do it?
Not while I've been here.
I'm sorry?
Not while I have been here, but I don't know if it was done previously.
Yes, there was an initial striping that when Ernesto was here, that was done, it was incomplete, and so our guys went out and made it complete.
We did it?
We did it.
But, we did it?
But they paid us. I mean, they charged us.
They charged us, and why didn't we go back to the company and have her do it? We paid them money. Mm-hmm. We used our people to do it.
And expand it greatly.
Well, that's not the issue here.
It may be due, in some of those cases, to project management, because oftentimes, if you don't get the end users on board and sign off, look, these are the plans, these are... I'm just...
Thank you.
Was that it, Ms. Gonzalez?
Thank you.
And are we going to get a full update of the campus, the pre-K-8?
Yes, we have a meeting scheduled a week from today for design and development powwow, if you will, with VMAC, CDA, and administration, 1:30 on next Tuesday, in which we're going to get our next big update. We really haven't had much interaction with CDA since the approval of the design.
Our big topics will be site utilities. They have those plans ready. And our next big discussion will also be like overall project budget and some of our owner project costs that we'll be reviewing.
So we're looking at the project budget?
Yeah, and that will be on Tuesday.
Okay. I guess if anybody else has any discussion for the bond project update, if not, we could. Okay, now the bond project management update.
Yes, I just wanted to mention that, of course, CASBE, we did close that RFP, and CASBE will be here to present on August 30th. They will be presenting three different models or scope of work for you guys to review and see what you think. So that's August 30th at 6 p.m., and I am working with that presentation with Mike Brooks. We'll be doing they'll have a draft of the presentation to me next Monday, and we'll be doing a conference call.
Okay. And I guess, does anybody have any questions on it? No? That would take us to the next item.
Agenda item 2F, CHS Energy Management Update, presented by Ms. Matthews.
Mr. Bailey, if you'd like to come up. Pull up the chair.
So basically, this is the first part of the project. Most of the parts will be here in Monday. Our longest lead time item is the air separator. And although this involves work throughout the campus, for example, the unlike metal couplings, that affects all 212 of the heat pumps that are throughout the building. The triple duty valves, those are on the four chillers, which should be less of a problem. The water makeup of the backflow preventer affects the gym. Mike and I are getting together tomorrow with Coach Brooks as well. While we understand the urgency of this project, one of the most critical things to understand about the Johnson Controls project, specifically at the high school, is that it does affect the air conditioning in the building. So for example, in the case of the gym, even now, in speaking to Coach Brooks this afternoon, they have volleyball tournaments and other athletic events. So, Mike and I and Coach Brooks and Mr. Badawi and Ms. Avajir were invited to that, but is to see how we can work around these events and schedule the work. And of course, as the work is done, well, you give it a standard time frame, a lot of things can come up.
Well, I mean, your Jennifer's point is well made. We understand that, you know, there are activities that we can impact those activities. And in talking to our service staff here locally, we have developed a plan to ensure that, you know, there's no interruption in services. You know, by the way, because there are four chill water pumps up there, you know, we can work around those systems, as well as doing work on weekends and evenings and things like that. So that's what we're prepared to do to ensure that, you know, there's no interruption or to you know, the activities that take place in that gym as part of the emergency repair process that we're undertaking.
And in addition to that, of course, tonight, because we're meeting tomorrow, Mike just came into town. So to accommodate that schedule, we're going to take most likely one of our HVAC techs. And during the length of this project, dedicating to that, this first phase is scheduled to take several weeks. And he'll be working his schedule around Johnson Control's schedule. So he will be here nights, weekends, or off-peak hours, and he'll be mirroring them and following them throughout the project in case anything comes up.
Can you just give a rundown of the, I guess, the whole midpoint report?
Okay, I'll be glad to do that. Thank you. The part that Jennifer was referring to, of course, is what we kind of termed the emergency repair to address some water contamination that's specific to the gym area. In addition to that, the phase one will encompass the rest of the geothermal system throughout the high school. And we're in the process of completing the scope of work, pricing, to bring back to staff to review with them. And go through, as Jennifer said, you know, the HVAC system consists of 212 individual heat water source heat pumps and 32 energy recovery ventilation system. And the way that this system was designed, it's almost like an orchestra, as you will, with each piece having to coordinate with the other piece. And what has happened was, you know, this was originally designed as a variable volume pumping system. And over time, what has happened is, you know, as things have failed in the control system side of it, which is that valves have been moved to the open position. And so as opposed to being a variable volume system, it is now a constant volume system. And as that has happened, there's also been the need to address some low pressure issues within the geothermal system at certain units because they were tripping off because of high compressor pressure. And so inline pumps have been installed to address that. There is also a large, as she said, a large number of units that have, you know, the dissimilar piping, which is called what's called electrolysis. And when that happens, you start getting contamination into the water. And the water quality, we've tested both on the chilled water side as well as on the geothermal side. And we're, you know, we've noted that there are, you know, high concentrations of iron and suspended solids in the water itself, which can cause issues, you know, with the equipment because it is contaminated and it reduces the efficiency. There were also some specialty type fittings that had issues they're referring to, you know, that were not put in, some of the triple V valves that she referred to, some suction strainers that were not installed into the lines, and basically those are inline strainers that go within the piping system that, again, is there to capture particulate matters to prevent that from collecting onto the, you know, the fins of the equipment, and again reducing the efficiency. There's also one of the things that we were going through and doing our scope development. One of the things, and you'll see this in item six, that it doesn't appear that it, when the system was originally done, that the testing, adjusting, and balancing was done, and so the water flow and the air flow has not been balanced on that system, and so that's one of the things we're looking at doing. You know, this additional commissioning that we're going to look at to ensure, again, just that the system is operating to the design spec and so that it is operating as efficiently as possible. You know, currently all 212 of those heat pumps are individually controlled by local thermostats. There's no automation system in place, again, to kind of operate as the conductor of this orchestra. You know, that going back to that analogy. And so as part of our process, we will be proposing a overall energy management system that will, you know, control the operation overall, will allow the staff to see how, you know, how the system is operating, to make the necessary adjustments to maintain the efficiency. Also, the system was in the original design, and it was noted, had some what's called energy recovery ventilators. And these units, you know, are to bring in outside air to meet the ASHRAE standards. And the way that they work is they have an energy recovery wheel inside that turns, and it's supposed to, you know, take heat out, and as the wheel turns, dissipate that heat in the cooling cycle, or vice versa in the heat cycle. And so right now, as we've looked at this, those units aren't operating at the proper efficiency, and so as part of our process, we will go through and make sure that those systems are operating to deliver the efficiency that they were designed for. So you can see there our proposed improvements. You know, we would completely drain, flush, and recharge, purge, and chemically treat the entire geothermal loop. We would replace all of the water, what we call water loop control valves that are missing and have been removed, as well as just replace overall. Each of the individual heat pumps and eliminate all of the dissimilar metal joining. We install all flow water flow balancing valves at all heat pump locations for proper water flow of each unit. The strainers that we talked about would be installed to make sure we capture all suspended solids in the water circuit. We install the check valves on the chilled water pumps or in the gym in order to eliminate the reverse flow and short circuit of the water flow. We install a chemical treatment apparatus for the geothermal system so that, you know, that system can be treated and the treatment can be maintained so that there's no corrosion and things happening there. Provide a complete retrocommissioning service for the entire HVAC system in order to bring it back to its original design and operating conditions, and then to do the test adjusting and balancing in order to bring the system back again to its original design. And finally, to install the automation system throughout the facility to control everything. Now, the program, the bond provided $200,000 for the entire building for all of this work. In addition to that, we are looking for energy savings to fund the total cost of this operation, or the total cost of this project. And along those lines, we've looked at the lighting systems in place in the building. And we've noted that, you know, the building in its original design was overlit, and that is based upon, you know, the guidelines that have been issued by the Illuminating Engineer Society of North America, their guidelines. And we've also installed 45 data loggers that to collect data to work into our design scope. And so we've looked at some opportunities and potential opportunities to change the lighting up in that facility that will generate savings that will help pay for the cost of this project and continue to provide savings even after the life of this project. And so we've outlined, you know, some of the various areas that we've looked at and some of the potential there to address that, to create the savings. In some cases, the light levels would be decreased somewhat. In a couple of cases, they're gradually looking at significantly increasing the light level, like in the gymnasium, for example. You know, we're looking at a pretty significant increase in light levels, as well as in the cafeteria, because of the change in the type of lighting that is being used in those specific areas. In addition to that, we're also looking, you know, at opportunities for water systems. All the systems that were in there were, you know, are the low flow toilets. So the China itself is you know, it's only, you know, 5 years old, so it's relative, it's good shape. You know, there's no need to replace that. One of the things that happens over time is that, you know, as part of the installation process and also over time, those units get out of calibration. And what that means is they're not within the spec that they were designed for, and so they're using more water with each operation than they should. And so we have gone through and have done a study to at each device to measure the water flow at that unit and so that we can go back and recalibrate that. And again, that is to generate savings to have to pay for the cost of this project, because again, the way that this was procured was under 44901 performance contracting, which requires that the total cost of the project be totally funded from the savings. And so we're looking for opportunities for savings, as well as the $300,000 in the bond to totally fund this project over the term.
And tomorrow, basically, what we'll be looking for is seeing the utilization of the building, what those schedules are, by what time the temperatures need to reach a certain point, how long it takes the building to reach the temperature that the occupants need to use it at, and then ensuring that we have a sufficient buffer of time when, for example, if the building needs to be back online at 6 a.m., that we are scheduled to completion is by midnight or 2 a.m., where it saves us a window of time for emergencies to remediate any problem, to ensure that the building is back online by the time we commit to.
Yeah, again, there's a lot of work that there's above ceiling work, there's lighting work, and so the point Jim makes is very good, that we want to make sure that when y'all walk into the building and ready to open up the classes, that there's no issues. And so that's a very important point to have that coordination in place. So I look forward to that. The other thing is, one of the things that we, and I feel to point this out, it's not in the report, kind of, and Jennifer talked about, kicking the building on and bringing it back up and things like that. Right now, if you look at your utility bills, there's a significant demand charge on the electricity. And that is, the electric company charges you based upon your peak demand. And so they look at intervals of time, 50-minute intervals, and they see what that peak demand is, and there's a premium that's charged for that. And so one of the things we're also doing as part of the control process of bringing controls in is to address that demand factor, and so that you're able to bring the equipment up in a phased manner so that it is ready for occupancy, but it's not all coming on at the same time. And so that we'll be able to significantly impact that demand KW that you're currently being charged for at the district level to again, create those savings. And so that's one of the things that we'll be doing as part of the control process.
Ms. Mendoza,
you know what? One of the priorities to me, and I know to the rest of my board members, was to have that geothermal pump running. I know we've been running it at full speed, and I'm just glad that it looks like we're finally on track. Thank you.
Mr. Cornell?
You mentioned in your report that there was significant overlighting at the high school in the exterior areas. Are you talking the amount of lights that are on, or the actual wattage on the bulbs?
It's actual wattage and light output. The measured light output is above the standard. And so again, there are ways either through delamping or change, going to higher efficiency lighting, that you can reduce that KW that is being consumed because of that overlighting.
What about, I've mentioned this in the past, about the actual amount of lights that are out on the parking areas?
That's one of the things that we're also investigating is to and it's in our report, is to look at the exterior lighting as well to see if there is a cost-effective solution for that as well.
Is there a way that we can put them, I don't know if we can install different, so that some of those lights after a certain period of time, and a lot of them, every other one maybe go off because after a certain period of time.
And that's one of the things I really want to talk to staff about is the security issue associated with that. I mean, that's something that we definitely want to be very cognizant of in making decisions as it relates to exterior lighting. Is making sure that we're not doing anything that, that creates an unsafe environment.
But the other side to that is, for example, while Mike is concerned with the cost of our electric bill, a lot of times we can leave the light on. However, the architects and engineers design different areas by the foot candles, like it's a work surface or a hallway. And so a lot of times they'll like blanketly apply in their design, like 2x4 lane fixtures, across the building without taking that into consideration. And those are some of the things that can help to engineer it.
One of the other issues that I've seen is that our staff, I always see the lights on evenings, and they're saying it's because they have to clean, but they're all, we don't have to have the entire wing on, so to speak,
zoned code.
I've always had that as an issue.
What we have built into this as well. What we have built into this as well is occupancy sensors, and to when those areas are unoccupied for a set amount of time, that those lights will go off and again we'll need to work with staff to identify to make sure that the areas that we put those in, you know, are conducive, and again not creating any issues for the safety or standard a safety issue at all.
Yeah, and the problem is that custodians don't like zone cleaning at night because there's a fear factor, because a lot of the building is dark, and that's a training issue.
Yeah, but we don't have to have every single room on.
Correct.
I mean, we've got to have some solution to that.
Yeah, and again, occupancy sensors will go a long ways to address that, because again, you know, once there's no motion in that room, those lights will go off, and there'll be a manual override, obviously, or it wouldn't come in, but so both will be available. But that will address a lot of that.
I can understand the hallway issue, but I mean, you know, to have every single room on in the whole wing because of the safety issue, just to me, when it's going to take them hours before they get over there. They got to find some kind of solution to that. The occupancy sensors, I guess, are a good way to do that. Yeah.
Is being scared in the dark a safety issue?
I'm always scared in the dark. But
we had zone cleaning in my last school district. When I was in Houston, and the custodians really had a hard time. And Mike's nodding his head. I'm sure he's seen this in other places as well.
Those buildings have lots of voices.
Two questions, Chair, if I may.
Okay.
What is the status, and Ron, maybe you know better than anybody, of the out-of-alignment motor that was such a concern a couple months ago and we took it out? Does anyone know, Mike or Ron, where we are on that?
I did contact the company the other day. They were waiting on some bearings to come in. And they said that if those bearings did not fix the vibration issue, that they were going to have to send it off somewhere else. So that's the last I heard on it.
What was this on?
It's on the one of the pumps for the cooling system.
Was that the pump that was rushed last year?
Right, that we rebuilt. We had rebuilt.
And so it didn't have?
The bearings in the pump itself, they're actually giving a lot of vibration on there. So we first thought it was the alignment between the motor and the pump itself, but now they're saying it's probably the bearings, the bushings. It's not the coupler, it's not the motor. It's got to, that's what they're saying. And they kind of told me that if that doesn't fix it, they don't know if they can even salvage the pump. So that's the last I heard.
Well, it's not even a year yet, right?
Good thing is we haven't paid for it yet, so we haven't paid them for their work yet, so at least we can hold that over again.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else have any questions? No? So what would be the next step then?
Our next steps, the meeting tomorrow is a very critical meeting with Jennifer as we discuss the logistics of the implementation and the schedule. We will be bringing back to staff, what the various facility improvement measures are. We'll be going through them with them in detail of each of those facility improvement measures, what the costs associated with each of those are, what the savings associated with each of those are. That we anticipate bringing that back right at the end of this month to staff for discussion and working with them. Once we agree upon the facility improvement measures that are to be implemented in the savings calculations that they were proposing, the next step would be to have a third party review, which is somebody who the district would hire as part. And again, this is provided for under the legislation, is that there is to be a third party, independent third party review of our calculations to verify that what we're calculating and the way that we're proposing to deliver the cost and the savings is correct. And so that third-party review would occur. And then based upon that, it would come back to the board for the board to be presented with the cost and savings, and then to decide whether to approve the performance contract to move forward with the implementation of
So again, it's very much, as I've said all along, a very collaborative effort, and one in which the district and board will is in total control of at each step along the
way. So when would we have it fully operational if we were to move forward with it?
We would envision bringing back to the board the performance contract in September, is what we're targeting for a decision there. Once that is approved, then we would move forward with the implementation based upon the schedule that we're able to work out. Again, the way we're looking at this is having to do the work, obviously, after hours, on weekends, during Christmas break, and even it may go as far as the summer to be able to make sure that we don't impact, anything that's going on in the campus. And so that's what we're prepared to do. The last thing we're going to, again, and as we said, and as Jennifer was saying, the last thing we're going to do is impact the education process.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Yes, thank you, and I guess we don't need any action, right? It's just an update. And so if that could take us to the next item.
Agenda item 2G, El Paso Water Utilities Projects Update, presented by Ms. Matthews and Dr. Murphy.
So we have three items under this. The first one was a potential acquisition of a piece of land adjacent to Spur 276. I spoke to Celia Salazar, who's been the project manager for that for the last 2 years, and the planning for the spur has been in process for the last 10. It was finally put out to bid last week, and it takes them 6 weeks to award the contract, and because construction of the spur is slated to start in January. The design of the spur has three points of access, one at the realignment of Talbot, the second one at the Isera de Guadalcaba, which is between the community college and the high school, and the third point being on Donovan, and those are the only points of access that were included in the bid package. The second page of this...
Does the Isera de Guadalcaba have a access both to the north and the south?
No, I believe just to...
The south?
Yes.
To the north, right?
Back toward the high school would be to the south.
Exactly.
Well, no, it would be to the east.
Well, it would be to the right of the page.
The right of the page.
The second page of this is the proposed typical section of the spur, as you would see it as it crosses that diagonal. So one of the reasons why this deal was so long in the making was because it had a bike lane and a running lane, and it wasn't a cemented channel. It was like an arroyo, which I'm sure was consistent with like the city's open space master plan and all those kinds of things. So that is a continuous run all the way from Talbot down to where it reaches Donovan. So in order to access the proposed acquisition from the spur, we would have to design and build a bridge and request TxDOT's permission. However, the other option would be, and I've done this before at a school on Yarborough, was you could buy land between your proposed property and Donovan, approach those landers, and you could build your own private road.
Go ahead.
Okay, so proposed access points on Huacaba, is it that you'd only be able to access to go one way, not to be able to cross, to be able to go to either direction? Is that right?
I personally, I'm not sure.
This is why we need to have a meeting with that engineer.
We need to get a meeting with TxDOT.
Sure. Yes.
And we've already been trying, but
we have. I've called Mr. Bewick multiple times, and. Yes, I've been trying to see that.
I mean, at least we need to have an access point, which would be from Ruacala to, if it only is an access point to go one direction, it would be heading towards back to Talbot, because we couldn't cross the actual spur either underneath or over. You could do an an underpass or an overpass, right? The bridge that they're talking about. But at least if we can have an access point and we'll go back to Talbot, preference is that we're able to have an access to go either north or southwest, actually, right?
I can see if I can put that in the writing package.
But when we add it, if we have at least one access out of there, that's fine, because we need that. If I recall right, we actually had a board meeting, and it was a town hall board meeting at the high school. And I remember very specifically asking that of TxDOT that we were going to have an access for the West Gala. Now, I should have been more clear, I guess, in asking them what access should have been, whether it's both ways or just one. And it looks like they're, you know, at least if they can provide one, that's great. And I know that they're probably, it's not in their budget to do an overpass, and they want us to do it, right?
For both directions?
Yeah.
I really don't know. I don't know if it's in one direction or both directions. I can ask, and I can also try and set up that.
And this is new information, because when we met with Ed Archuleta last week, he indicated no access at Rubalcaba. So we need to have a meeting with Mr. Bleeling.
Yes. And I think, of course, they're with the water utilities, and this information came directly from TxDOT, so they're in a position to be obviously more knowledgeable. So, yeah, we can set that up. So the next item is the Conotillo Bosque lift station. What you have on the second page is the schedule for that project. Currently, they have selected an engineering design firm, which is Frank Spencer & Associates. They are waiting for the contract to be signed, and they will approve their meeting minutes at their September board meeting. And at that time, once that contract has been executed, we do open the full amount for the design. And design is scheduled to be through the fall, and it will be fully permitted near in December. And the last item for the water utilities was the easement at Albanete. They are currently revising the easement. It will be bidding in September. It has a 2 to 3 week construction time. They'll be testing the line 1 month afterward. I asked them what time frame that they planned on coordinating with the school district. The largest window of opportunity we have is Christmas, which, although it's a 2 week break, and although you can require people to come to work, a lot of times it just doesn't materialize. So I think that for a Christmas plan, we would probably plan on doing one lane so that you would be assured that after the 2 week break, you would have at least one lane of access, and then you'd have the second one should it fall into a third week of construction, which is very likely. And they did say that they did anticipate doing it at Christmas and not next summer, simply because they are behind schedule. They've been working on it for 5 years.
Yes. Go ahead. Any questions? What's that? No. And we don't need anything to recommend, right? This will just, I guess, we'll be getting the engineer?
Yeah, just an update.
Okay. I was trying to find the percentage on the next item, but if anybody has any questions, if not, we can move forward to the next item.
Agenda item 2H, review of that. Oh, I'm sorry. Architectural and engineering contracts to include dimensions architects for Calabrillo High School, Azerete Middle School, Calabrillo Middle School, and GA architects for Northwest ETHS and Azerete Middle School. So then I'll miss that.
Okay.
When I submitted the backup and cover page for the future board agenda items for the regular board meeting, I submitted the following five AE fee proposals. to end, to culminate in a final contract award. Those were based on an architect, and each architect was given a contract for the work at any given campus. So Dimensions would receive a contract for everything at CES or everything at GES. And it is several contracts. And the ones that you have here are the ones that were top priority because these five either involved a building addition or finalized the fee proposal for the work on the tracks, which we're near completion on. Immediately upon publishing the agenda, I spoke to Mr. Rodriguez, and the idea was contemplated that we might simply award three contracts, one to Dimensions, one to GA, and one to M&K, for the total of all of their projects. And we have no objection. And so because of that, if it so pleases you all or upon your recommendation, we would move forward with submitting three contracts to the next board meeting for each of those respective architects consistent with your awards. And this is a summary of those three.
Mr. Cornell?
With respect to the M&K, though, aren't we in the process of determining whether or not on some of those we're going to need the architectural services or not? Isn't that the issue that you brought up?
Actually, with
Johnson Controls and whether or not that was...
Correct.
So then we shouldn't award the entire contract. We knew as assigned that...
Right, but in the case of M&K, we're distinguishing them. They have, M&K has a potential function with Johnson Controls, which is a whole other story.
Separate.
But then what I'm showing is just the work that they're doing, like
CMS.
CMS,
okay.
And that's it.
All right.
Yeah.
I didn't know. What
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Just real quick on mine, there was going to be different contracts for each campus, and I thought it's better for us just to have one contract with
yes.
them. So that way there wouldn't be,
right.
you know, well, this contract said this, or we get into anything. Of that sort, so I thought it would be better for us to have one contract with each individual entity. I'm trying to get the percentages. Do you have the percentages? I got some of them. I'm still working.
Some of them vary.
And my thing is, the other thing is, what if something comes up, like a small thing, let's say we've forgot or we need to, you know, have more, I don't know, on a let's say on the multi-purpose, not, let's go towards, we needed something else that we might have forgotten in the campus and somebody thought it was part of the project, let's say sidewalk, and you put it under the architects, here you have it, do we have something, any miscellaneous within that campus, or we're just gonna go under the guidelines by the law, which is, whatever percentage it is that you cannot go over, like on a, like here we have pretty much everything on one architect, right? You have whatever it may be, whether it's a canopy PA system, you know, it might be an addition. What if something comes up that needs to be added to that contract? Do we have it miscellaneous, or we just follow what the law says? If anything, what is it, 20%? Anything?
I don't know. Are we going to have a list broken out for, I don't recall the last job of the contract.
Do you have this list?
There's a copy right there.
I think there's a copy right here.
Do you have one?
Well, in general, this list, the majority of this list, the bond projects, also the contract will include a clause that says, for example, at every campus they'll be doing like an ADA assessment. And so from that ADA assessment, if there's specific sidewalks that are required, in other words, to bridge the gap between a playground we built or a water fountain we built or to pick up some of these odds and ends, that clause is in the contract for that specific reason. And also, it's pretty much understood that you're giving somebody a scope of work like this building, or there is generally some flexibility in it. However, if we are revise the project multiple times, or you know, doing you know, exorbitant jumping through hoops, but in general, it's contemplated that there is some room for minor things.
So there is room for miscellaneous, or we're going to add that within that contract? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think there is some miscellaneous. I think architects in general do perform.
Well, there's like a certain percentage, but do we have it under the contract if anything miscellaneous? Or let's say even at the high school, right, we're looking at extending or putting on the band room, and yet it does not have it under the projected budget. Well, that's something different. Never mind.
That would be a change.
Well, yeah.
I don't, Jennifer, maybe you know better than I do. The last draft of the contract, I don't remember seeing a percentage that allowed us to add new projects based on a certain percentage of the total value of the contract.
And that's what we did in the past.
No, I think we would have is leeway for the particular campuses. Additional work is related to some project that an architect already worked on. He's going to have that in there.
Right.
But it's not based on the percentage of the overall dollar value or anything like that.
So it's not on a percentage basis. This is because in the past it was, and that's what I was totaling up. Like some, one of them is 8.6%, the other one. And so if something needed to be done, that was a percentage. And so my concern is, let's say something needs to be added, you come back to us, are you going to have to come back to us, or are we going to have to go out and bid, or should we add that in that contract language? Do you get what I'm saying, Mr. Blanco?
Well, right. One of the things that was in discussion is their fee is based on the project budget, and they're based on the original project budget. And so their fee is usually a percentage of the budget. However, should you choose to supplement the bond, let's just say you add another, you say, okay, the architect designed this building, and you say, you know what, we're going to supplement that from our own funds by $2 million, then the architect is going to say, look, you gave me original project budget is so much, and I based my fee on that, and now you're saying this is a project that's twice or three times more expensive, right? And that's something that could come up. But if you are not supplementing the overall bond with external funds, the architects, this is the fee that they proposed.
So it's a flat fee?
It's a lump sum. Go,
Mr. Cornell?
Yeah, the only other caveat to that is that we may propose to have some alternates on some of those that we talked about. Okay. And those should be something that before the architect starts.
Yes.
Once we assign, let's say, that project, we're going to say, okay, look, we may assign to do alternate on this project if we find the savings through either the bond or the board decides to put money from the fund balance. So we want you to do a proposal for some of these alternates. That should be in the contract. So when we start the design process on those alternates, that needs to be part of the design from the get-go.
And that's what I'm saying is, does it have to be a percentage, or does it, because pretty much we're given a flat fee, and if we change that, is that going to be a change?
That's why we need to decide what those alternates are going to be, and the architect can then give us a fee with alternates is going to be X.
Right. What they would give you is they usually attach a fee schedule. So, for example, because alternates can be all kinds of things, like we can say like a specific type of flooring. Let's say you wanted a gym with all wood floor, and we put that as an alternate. Like there's different degrees of alternates from a building addition, which, you know, let's just say instead of one building addition, we propose to do two building additions, and we use one as an alternate. Well, that might be excessive, but if you say, oh, okay, well, what about the shade canopy or flooring, or certain type of windows, those smaller alternates, just so that they give us some flexibility at the time of bidding. I mean, an architect will be in agreement with those kinds of things.
Well, I'm talking about the adding of classrooms to the gym at the high school.
Okay.
That kind of alternate.
Yeah, then we get in a crunch if something like that were to happen, because you could only go a certain percentage above the total.
No, it's not based on that. I can tell you that I understand Mr. Cornell is saying there's a clause within, I don't remember the language, but I know there's a change clause and an alternates clause in each of the agreements that if you ask for something beyond, because they're not going to be stuck with this price and then you ask them to do a whole bunch more work, they're entitled to review and submit a new fee proposal for that new work. You don't have to accept it.
But
to submit that fee proposal.
But then the other issue, I don't know if I'm looking at it on the construction side, let's say, is it the same? Like if you were to award $10 million in work, right? And you actually realized it had to be $15 million for the amount of work that needed to be done. Then we went over the contract amount. There's only a certain amount that you could go over.
But for the architects, they're not.
So I'm understanding two different type of contracts.
Yes,
is that correct?
The architect contract is based on what you asked them to do, to design, the scope, and what they've been provided, their work, given us prices for it. If you're going to make a significant change in one of the projects and it requires new design, you're going to reprice it for it.
Okay, and I guess that's, in the past, my understanding of the way we used to do it was we would just have a percentage, whether it was 5 or 6%, and so...
I don't think any of these contracts are set up that way.
So they won't.
I think, though, for example, if the project was supposed to be $10 million budgeted, and this is now talking about construction, not architecture fees, and it came in at $15 million, then if you awarded the contract for $15 million, though, you had up to a, I think, 25% that you could go up.
So we could only go to 12,500,000.
Of the amount you awarded, but that's construction, totally separate from the AD fees.
Okay, and my concern is, if there is any adjustment, is it better for us? We did it two different ways. You could go with the percentage, or you could go with what we're currently doing on a fee schedule.
They did base their fee schedule on a percentage.
Okay. So if we added something, or we said, hey, the band room is not, or something like that, you needed to see if we could fix it or do something with it, then would that same fee apply under that percentage? Or till it's negotiated, they could come back and say, of course, they could come back and say 8%. We could say, no, thank you, we'll look at it.
Before they move on with any work that's not within their scope, and if they feel that it's not within the scope of their contract, they'll come and they'll submit a professional service amendment, or basically like an amendment, a fee proposal, like, we believe it's going to take us this many hours, and for this additional 10 classroom wing we want to add, this would be the additional.
Mr.
Yeah, you can always do an amendment to the contract.
Exactly.
As long as it's not, it doesn't change the breadth of the contemplated agreement.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so if something miscellaneous were to come up, we could also cover that?
Sure.
Yeah.
So unless I do intend to... My intention at this point would be to submit fee proposals and contracts for the following three architect firms at the next board meeting. That is
okay. And so the only thing, if you could just give us a percentage. I did some of them. I just want to look at the percentage, or I could do that. But
I could do the percentage. But it's gonna be.
Yeah, one was 5.79, and the other one was 8.6. I was just trying to see. Sort of on the percentage side. But does anybody else have any questions? Do you get where I was coming from, Mr. Cornell?
Yes.
And so I guess my understanding from the different contracts will be able to do that.
Okay.
No questions? So we're in agreement to recommend it to the full board for approval?
We just want to recognize that we have one of our architects here tonight, Jerry. Jerry, thank you for being here.
Okay.
Agenda item 2I, discussion and review of master contract for delinquent tax collection services and CISD's continued participation in the agreement, fees charged for the work performed and the relationship amongst the various participants in the agreement. The agreement presented by Mr. Armando Rodriguez and Mr. Steve Lambo.
We're presenting this together, I guess. I guess you know some of the questions. The major question that I have, I know the contract with,
I guess it would be good for you to report back to us on how the contract is set up with the City Consolidated Tax Office, the whole system, how that whole, do you need napkins? Okay. How that whole City Consolidated Tax Office is set up and what options are there and how is that set up? One. The other question is, I know that several attorneys, the way that contract is set up with the City of El Paso, some individuals are getting certain, I don't know if it's split fee sharing, if they're splitting the fees, if they're sharing, what is it for those individuals that are local, and how is that, who's getting what and how much? I want to make sure that it's transparent. And then how it relates to us. The other concern that I had looking at that, when we approve the contract, our contract with them, it's under the Limborger firm. The last contract we approved at the last meeting.
That's a difference.
I want to make sure that those fees are not being shared. So I want to see if we're sharing, because it might be a different entity, but they might share those fees with the local individuals. And if that's, I mean, it's not being transparent. So I just want to make sure of that. That's pretty much the major concern when you look at that whole contract. It's not transparent. I tried to look at it, and I didn't want to question it as a board member. But now I feel that I have to question it as a board member.
And just to follow up, when this first came up in a meeting, there were certain items of information that were requested, and I went back and pulled the list that we originally prepared, and I had asked any of the board members to think about it, if you all have any additional suggestions on what we would ask for. But as you're a member of that contract group, and Kenya Tia was obviously being assigned a percentage of the fee that's being charged for that group, you're entitled to ask for the information. Frankly, I don't see any way that the firms or the city could hold it from you, but the items that you would ask for were information regarding who's doing the work, essentially. The contracts between the firms and the lawyers, and how it's being divided up between them. A summary of all the fees that have been charged, in particular to Kenny Teo for its share of that tax collection work. Now, that's where there are two different contracts. Only you all approved the other night for a different version of the appeal work. Property valuation, the tax collection of delinquent fees is a separate firm, and I'm aware of that firm. The other question was when it was last bid out. I think we actually know the answer to that. It was sometime in 2000 or 2001, was the last time it went out. Then the other two items of information were whether there are any agreements that are specific to just Kenny Teo or other entities. I don't know the answer to that question yet, and then options for Kenny Teo if there are other vendors that provide the same work. I believe that they are, but I don't believe that any of them are here locally in El Paso. We have to explore whether or not they're required or whether or not it would actually be a good idea to stay a member of the contract group that is being managed by the City of El Paso or join some different group of collection work.
The other question that I would like to look at too is, I know that the city is collecting the taxes and then the check is being given to the firm. Is there any way that the consolidated tax office could collect those taxes that aren't being, let's say, propose something once it goes into an appeal or once it goes into the court, then that's when you have the third party, which is Delgado Acosta firm, actually fight it in court. But before that, can those fees be collected by the City Consolidated Tax Office and then shared amongst, let's say, entities like us? You know, the 15% that they charge, can the city say, you know what, we're going to collect it, we're going to hire our own attorneys, the amount of money that we collect and we charge the people 15%, we could share that within the governmental entities? And Mr. Cornell, I'll
yeah, there's several issues on that because my understanding is that the firm is paid once it's delinquent and their letters go out. It doesn't matter whether they file suit or not. That delinquent
fee goes to the firm.
The percentage charged on the fees that are actually returned is my understanding.
Right.
So if they have a group of 100 people, all 100 of them delinquent, you're right, they get a percentage of whatever they collect from that group.
Right. And that's whether or not it's through their efforts. If the next day, delinquent, they still collects it, they still get the fee.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah. And I think what Mr. Rodriguez is saying, is there any way we can separate that out from actually through the efforts of the actual firm, they collect it?
I don't know who negotiates the contract terms regarding the time period at which the lawyer's right to the fee arises. That's the question.
Right.
Who did that? Something we could ask, or I'm sure can tell us.
That's got to be in their contract.
I don't know that it is, just the timing issue is. I don't think it says who came up with the idea of the time period.
Yeah, but it's got to be in the contract that they're paid regardless of whether it's...
It is.
Yeah. Now, the other issue is something came up with respect to some accounting problems that the city tax collection.
They were off by some number. It was in the paper.
A million or so.
But they were using that money for their office supplies instead of, right? Can you check on me?
Okay. I would like to find out what the problem was. I just remember hearing about it, but I want to know exactly what it is, because technically the city's the one that's actually doing the collections for us. And because the firm is, since they're the primary, am I understanding right, the primary party?
Yes, good managing entity.
Managing entity. And so I want to know what the problem was with that came up.
The contract I have with the district is like about 2 pages. Or actually, this is a contract that's, it's just 1 page, but that's the appeals, right?
Yes, that's the most recent one. It came to you with
it. The other, I guess, since it's a monopoly, we can't even compare to see what percentage, I mean, we can't compare to see how much is Clint collecting compared to ours. Pretty much it's...
Do you mean performance?
Performance.
I think they do track that, actually.
But how can we compare it if it's the same company?
Well, if you're asking for performance on how much of the share that Penny Teal is entitled to, I don't know the answer to those questions.
We could ask
Penny Teal is entitled to receive based on its share, what the performance rate is of collecting that share of the income tax.
Compared to the other school district?
Sure, I think you could.
Okay.
I actually do think that they track that.
That would be nice to see. The other question was on the split fees, looking at that, and then the other thing is looking at how many cases those individuals have actually done.
I don't follow.
The caseworker. I mean, you have the Gala Costa Spencer getting fees out of it, but yet how much casework have they done within those type of cases? And do we need to put recommend it to the board, or is this...
I think you need to recommend it. That was the idea, that we prepare a list, a committee, and recommend to the board so that you all can actually vote if you want to actually make the request. So far, I've got 9 items. I'll just go over them. If everybody has done suggest an item, I'll go over them. I'm
trying to think. I think if anything, I could, or anybody else could, ask for any...
It's between now and the regular board meeting, we can always add it at the regular board meeting. Should I take an action tonight? But just for information's sake, these are the 9 items so far, based on prior meeting, and this meeting. A request for identification of all the lawyers and firms handling the work, and who actually is doing the work. That was added tonight. A request for all fees charged to Kenny Teo for its share of the work. I can add into that one the performance for kind of tailor to shorten this a little bit. The date it was last bid out for the contract work, all agreements and contracts between the lawyers relate to Cantillo's portion of the work. Whether the contract from the last meeting to be approved for the appeals of the visible line barber from Aaron and whether anybody else receives fees from that contract. Number 7, the actual process used for collecting the fees, whether or not the Consolidated Tax Collection Office can revise, review, or change the time period at which fees become due.
Another good question would be, I guess, till when is our district binded on that contract?
The length of the contract. That's the
last one. And how does it bind us, too?
I'll give you the last one in a second. And then a review of the error on the tax collection work. I remember reading about that. I actually don't know how it impacts the district, but I'm sure we can ask. We'll find out whether or not there's any share that you're shorted, if you're owed any amount of additional fees that we're collecting and not paying the district. The last would be the options for you to review under the current contract. How long you're bound, whether or not there are other options for you to explore to handle the tax collection work. I can tell you just based on my knowledge in the legal community, and Mr. Coronado can attest to this as well. It's a monopoly, it's true within the county of El Paso, and I think that is one of the issues, is that it's hard for one entity, and we may be in a position where we ultimately recommend you don't be in it. It's hard for one entity to strike out on their own and handle this type of work. There are definite savings by having groups together to handle the work.
So you also have the process if we, I mean, just to let us know if there is a process to withdraw from that collaborative.
Yes.
Okay. And I guess if any other questions arise, I'm trying to think.
Think of anything else, just let me know when it
okay.
comes up to that meeting.
And this could have been done in closed session. Is that correct? Legal advice?
No, we're just asking for a list of information.
I mean, we're being transparent, but
it. We covered it last time in open session.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess that's almost taking us to, or is it? Yeah.
Agenda item 3, community input.
No problem. I mean, anybody, Mr. Gatlin? And I guess that'll take us to next agenda item.
Agenda item 4, community
input. Recycle stuff.
Yes, and are we okay to adjourn? Make a motion to adjourn. Without objections, without objection.
I like these. They are a net,